na chai tana prabhan sana jaya jaya goda na shiva sadhi.
The following is a lecture given by His Holiness Jayapataka Swami on July 22, 1986 in Bangalore, India. The class begins with a reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 6, Verse 18.
Mannam yadachagat
Vajjam mannam yadachagat
Mohimai shatato brahman
Mohimai shatato brahman
Purushasyat duratyaya
Purushasyat duratyaya.
By grace Srila Abhoycharan Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada.
Jaya Srila Prabhupada.
The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the controller of immortality and fearlessness. And He is transcendental to death and the fruitive actions of the material world. O Narada, O Brahmana, it is therefore difficult to measure the glories of the Supreme Person. Translation, the Supreme Personality.
The Supreme Personality.
Of Godhead.
Of Godhead.
Is the controller.
Is the controller.
Of immortality.
Of immortality.
And fearlessness.
And fearlessness.
And He is transcendental.
And He is transcendental.
To death.
To death.
And the fruitive actions.
And the fruitive actions.
Of the material world.
Of the material world.
O Narada.
O Narada.
O Brahmana.
O Brahmana.
It is therefore difficult.
It is therefore difficult.
To measure.
To measure.
The glories of the Supreme Person.
The glories of the Supreme Person.
Dear Lord Brahma, the founder of our disciplic succession, who is also, you can say, the founder of the creation of this universe, he explains some of the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In the previous verses, he was talking to Lord Shiva, stating that he or Lord Shiva, what to speak of, Indra and other demigods, are not able to perfectly understand the limit of the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What to speak of others? Here, similarly, he explains it's difficult to measure the glories of the Supreme Person. Why it's difficult to measure the glories of the Supreme Person, he also explains. It's not that, as in some religious traditions, they say you simply have blind faith. If you say, why do we believe in this particular thing, they say you just have blind faith. You don't ask any questions. It's not like that. If he's saying, well, there's a God, we don't know what He looks like, we don't know what He does, we don't know what He is, we don't know anything about Him except He has a son, and you have to surrender to Him, and that's it. It's not like that. He's explaining the Lord is illuminated, self-illuminated. That the Lord is immortal. That He is controller of fearlessness. That He is transcendental to death. That He's above the laws of karma. And so many other descriptions are given in the Vedas, of course, even explaining about the Lord's abode, that the spiritual planets are tripad vibhuti, 3/4 to 75% of His total energy. And the material world is akapad vibhuti, or 25%. There are many universe is, in the material world, as there are mustard seeds in a bucket. It's quite a few universes. But each planet in the spiritual world is bigger than one universe in the material world. And there are countless universes, at least three times as many planets. Three times as many universes. How many? There's Tetris, Koti, Devota, 33 million demigods in this universe. And in each demigod has his own planet. So then how many planets? At least there's 3,300 million. And so there's many, at least three times that many, times as many universes as there are in the material world, and each planet in the spiritual sky is also as big as one universe. So in this way it's practically inconceivable. But in charge of the entire spiritual universe, there's one Supreme Lord. But of course, he appears on each planet in a different form. Narasimha, Vamana, Varaha, Matsya, Kurma, and so on. So, in this way we can understand that the glory of the Lord, as explained in Upanishad, Puranas, is unlimited. So how to understand? How to understand this glory of the Lord? It's possible to understand the glory of the Lord if we take up the process given by the Lord. He explained that if you want to know me, then you follow the process of devotional service. He explained, Bhaktamam ami janati, that if I am being my devotee, no one else can understand me. When he revealed his mystery to Arjuna in the Gita, he told him, Bhakto saka saka cheti rahasyam hita luttamam. I'm revealing this secret to you because you are my saka, you're my friend and you're my bhakta. If we want to know who is Krishna, we should be, become his friend, become his devotee. Ninth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna said that those who are thinking of him, surrendering to him, who are taking shelter of him, worshipping him, they are the most united with him. So in this way, it's not difficult to unite with Krishna through the process of bhakti. That's why Krishna explained that of all yogis, he considers the bhakti yogi to be the most, the topmost. Yoginam abhisarveshan madgatenantaratmana satavan bhajate jomam savayukta tamo madaha. On the other hand, Prabhupada explains here the great sannyasis, brahmacharis, yogis of the Jnana Marga or Yoga Marga, Astanga Marga school. For them it's very difficult to understand Krishna. Bhunam janmanamante janavang mankupadyante Vasudeva sarvamiti samahatma sudurlava. After many, many births, even a great Gani, a great Pandit, Sannyasi, Brahmachari, they're not able to understand the real position of the Lord. It's very rare to find one who knows the transcendental position of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So in other words, therefore, it's a very great opportunity for everyone to take up this devotional service to Krishna. By taking up the devotional service to Krishna, then you can understand this greatness of the Supreme Lord. Jai Krishna Balaram. Jai Nitai Gaur. This was the special gift of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Different avatars give different benedictions, but the special benediction of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is that he gave the benediction of bhakti. Krishna, he gives benediction of moksha or swargavas very easy. It's not any great matter for him to give. Although Hiranyakashipu, he did a great tapasya and asked Brahma to get the blessing of immortality. But Brahma said, I cannot give it. How can I give you what I myself don't possess? If you go to somebody who's driving rickshaw, scooter rickshaw, he's making 1,000 rupees a month, and you press him, you give me 1 lakh rupee donation. Where he'll get it? So you must pay. I don't have. No, but I don't care, you have to give. I don't have, how can I give? You must pay. Or income tax officer, if they come, you show your accounts, and you say that you show you're making 1 lakh rupees profit. They say, no, you made 1 crore profit. You have to pay tax on 1 crore. I don't have. No, but that's my finding. Where you give? So now government has said they're going to accept the income tax submission. So, that's the thing. We may pray. Sometimes people think all the demigods are the same. So they pray to Durga, give me immortality. But how she can give? Or they pray to Shiva, give me this. But even Lord Shiva explained that Vishnu is the giver of mukti. You can pray to different demigods, but you cannot get everything from them. If you want to get these certain things, you have to go to Vishnu. Of course, you can get anything from Vishnu, but these things you can only get from him. If you want to get a parking pass to at the Bidhan Sabha, so you can park your car there, you can get that from the chief minister. But you don't have to go to him to get a parking pass for that. If you can get also from the head of PWD and so many other junior officer, if you have some business there. So why go bother? So that's why the Vedas have told us, alright, you want to get a wife, you worship Uma. You want a husband, you worship Shiva. You want Siddhi, you worship Ganesh. You want this, you worship this one. Because they can give that. But then people became bewildered. They think that all the gods are the same. They don't understand what is the difference. When the world, when the universe gets destroyed, all these positions are vacated. And they return again back inside the body of the Lord. To come out again at the new creation. So actually, this way Narada Muni, after receiving these instructions from Lord Brahma, he personally went and told Vyasadeva, if the one thing you miss doing is you just glorify Krishna, glorify the Supreme Person. You've told all about every conceivable path, you've given a totally objective viewpoint, but it's so vast that people, they're not able to see the whole objectivity of it because you failed to give that central point, that there's one Supreme Absolute Truth and that's the ultimate, samam bonam, that's the param brahm. So people become bewildered. You see, the Vedas are so vast that you pick up one Veda and you read, each Veda says that that particular demigod is supreme. So the people get bewildered. In fact, some commentators, they start to accuse the Vedas because they don't know what is the philosophy, that they are just showing from a different viewpoint. Just like if somebody from the viewpoint of the Bangalore municipality, he can start praising the mayor. You're the topmost citizen. You're the best of the bunch. You're the controller of the city council. You can give all the permits. You can give us everything. You're the supreme. Supreme what? Supreme in Bangalore. And someone else is saying to the chief minister, you're the head of the ministers. You have all the portfolios. You're the greatest. You're the topmost. You are the original of all the ministers in this government. This government, but what about the previous government? Now he's even out of the party. So, this is the point that this, according to perspective, it's not that Vedas are wrong, but they're giving certain perspective on certain things. But even within that, for instance, if you read the glories of Durga, it says that she's the Chandi, in the Chandi of the Markandeya Upanishad, there it mentions that she is actually the Vaishnavi, she's the Narayani, she's the Shakti of Vaishnava, Vishnu, she's the Shakti of Narayan. But that, the Durga worshippers, they skim over quick. I don't know how they understand that. But they go over that very quickly. They should know that there's various Shaktis of Vishnu. Prasya Shakti Vividai Visruyate, so the Swatar Upanishad explains that there are external Shaktis and internal Shaktis. So in this verse, previous verse, we are understanding that the Lord has got internal Shakti and external Shakti. So the external Shakti is of a lesser magnitude than the internal Shakti. But nonetheless, that Shakti exists, just like in government. Budget outlay may be different for police department or for welfare or for commerce or for different department. But that doesn't mean that one department doesn't exist because it gets a lesser budget. Still it exists, it has some function. You cannot also do without it. Even if the budget is less, that does not mean that the function is dispensable. Simply budget is different, that's all. So, in a similar way, external energy budget, Shakti, 1/4. Internal energy budget, 3/4. But both has got their value, so they have to be explained. So this has been explained that the Bahirango Shakti, Antarango Shakti, the Bahirango Shakti or the material world is also an eternal Shakti. That material energy is eternal. That's why even modern physicists have understood that there's a conservation of energy. Energy is always existing. You may burn it, you may melt it, you may change its structure, but sum total energy remains the same. This Vedas say that this energy is eternal. So there are four eternal aspects and there's one temporary aspect. You see, there's the living entity, or the internal Shakti, of which a living entity is a part. There's the five. So there's the Lord, internal energy, then there's time, external energy, time, and then karmas. So the four are eternal. But because time is over, time is also eternal. But because time is over, the karmas or material temporary activities, those activities are temporary. For instance, you construct this wooden case here. This case is not eternal. After some time, termites, different things are going to eat it, and it's going to change. This was made by some material activity. You can make this book, but now we're trying to preserve Prabhupada's books. They say that because of the acid in the paper, after some time the book starts to turn brown, decay, and so on. So now they say you put things in microfilm that lasts for a longer period of time. But whatever you do, material thing has a beginning, has an end. Nothing is permanent. Because time factor has its toll on all material things. But Krishna, the material, spiritual energy, even time itself, these are eternal factors. But the spiritual energy is above time. The material energy is controlled, is affected. The material activities are affected by the time element. So although the material energy is eternal, its shape, its function is controlled by time. But the spiritual energy is above time. Therefore, in the material, in the spiritual world, there is no death, there's no old age, there's none of the problems that come from passing of time. Those problems only exist here in the material world. Because between the material energy and the material activities, the time element is separating. So, these things are very difficult to understand when you're in the material world. Whether you're a great sannyasi or pundit or even a demigod, when you're in the material world, it's hard to understand what is beyond the material world. Especially if a person is simply speculating. Just like upstairs, if we hear some noise, Prabhupada gave this example. There may be some kind of tapping noise, and you're sitting here, we can all take a poll, what is that noise? Someone is saying that some life members' daughters are practicing Bharatanatyam. And someone can say no, someone's washing his clothes. And someone can say no, someone is, mystery is repairing. Someone else can say no, that some gundas from the place, they came upstairs and they're playing dice and the dice is hitting, you know. Like this, you can run speculating. No one can say, who is there saying the right thing? And you go upstairs and you find that, crow is just head there or something. So, unless somebody goes up and sees what's happening, comes down. So that way Narada Muni, he's a messenger from Narayan. He goes to the spiritual world, he comes down. He gets instruction from Brahma, but he got such a blessing, he himself can go to the spiritual world. And not only that, Krishna himself comes down to give the instruction. So if you want to know what is going on outside of the universe, what is the universe, how you'll know it within the universe? You need to know only if you get the objective, broad viewpoint. Who has that viewpoint but Krishna? You may be a great sannyasi in the material world, but that doesn't give you the vision what's outside the material world. You see, that vision has to come only by the blessing of the Lord. And that blessing is given not simply by vairagya, but it's given to those who are devotees. That's why Durvasa Muni, although he was a great, he was a Manasputra of Brahma, he was more powerful than many demigods. Even demigods were afraid of his curses. But he was defeated by the simple grihastha householder devotee Maharaj Ambarish, who was a complete fervent practitioner of bhakti yoga. He had to fall at his feet and beg for forgiveness. I said, I didn't understand the power of the bhaktas. So generally, the sannyasis don't understand the power of bhakti. That's why when Dhruva Maharaj, when he was going back to the spiritual world, then the other higher planets, Mahalok, Janalok, they're watching him go by. And they said they could not go so high by their mystic power, how he was going to such a higher level. This indicates that not only are the levels of the universe simply a material level, like now they're sending these Voyagers and other type of rocket ships at the expense of billions of dollars to go out in outer space so that 30,000 years from now they'll be sending back some information from the next galaxy. So that all the scientists who are still alive, then they can get the information. So this type of programs are going, but we find that in Vedas, indication of going higher is more than, more than just a level of space. But actually there's higher levels in consciousness, higher level in various dimensions, whereby one is able to go from one planet to the next planet, or out of the entire material universe, out of the sight of these demigods. So they are watching and they could, he went out of sight. He went to beyond the level where they were able to understand. Just like a small 5-year-old child is able to understand reality to a certain degree. You know, this is my mother, this is my father, this is my uncle, this is my auntie, this is my brother, my sister, my dog. This is the house I live in. And they may know the neighborhood, but they may not know the Bangalore. Bangalore is beyond their total to understand the entire geography of Bangalore. Gradually as they grow, they know Bangalore, then they know that there's India and there's so many states in India, and they can understand that there's a world we live in, and then the world has so many countries in it, and each country has got different languages and customs and so on. So like this, according to a person's not only age, but the development of their vision and their knowledge, they're able to get a different perspective. So when one's able to develop their consciousness to the level of understanding, not only what are the stars in the universe, according with telescopes and so on, but to understand rather what is God, what is the Supreme Lord, what is the Supreme Person, and that there's beyond this universe which is visible by our, to some extent by our material eyes, that there's an entire unlimited material creation with as many universes in it as there are seeds of mustard that can be contained in a big bucket, in a big drum. So then, beyond this entire material creation, there's a total other spiritual realm. So this, how is it possible to know, even if you're a great sannyasi, you can't see beyond the universe. You may see Brahmalok, you may see Chanar, how you'll know? That information has to be brought down. So that's why Krishna, he comes down, yada yada hi dharma se glaniya bhavati vat abhyutanam adharma se tadatmakam srijamyaham. I come down out of my own, srijamyaham, I come myself. It's not that he's brought down. You see, we don't come by ourselves. We come because of karmas, because of some offense we've made from the spiritual where we came down. We have to get rid of that attitude which has caused us to fall down. So Krishna when he came, Rama when they came, different avatars when they came, they killed the demons with their arrows, with their swords, with Krishna killed Kamsa with his own hand. So in this way, the demon was killed and delivered, and those demons also achieved moksha by the Lord's blessing. But Lord Chaitanya, he didn't kill the body of anyone like that. Rather, the part of us, that demonic aspect of us, that asuric bhava, you see, which was described by followers of Madhva, that there are some who have this asuric bhava, they cannot get rid of it, they cannot achieve moksha, or they cannot become pure. You see, I don't know how far that was said by Madhva himself, but the modern day followers, some of them have this idea. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, his power was that he would destroy that particular kalush, that covering, that avaran, that demoniac aspect of a soul, and leave the purified soul. That is why Lord Chaitanya is considered to be the most merciful incarnation of Vishnu, of Krishna, that ever existed. Because even Krishna did not do that. Someone had to go and surrender to Krishna, then he would be delivered. What about the demons like Sisupal and others? They have never surrendered to Krishna. They are demons, after all. They don't care to surrender to Krishna. So therefore, how they can get delivered? They may get some moksha by merging, again they can fall down. You see. So up to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, to some extent, a person who was in this material world, it was hard for them. If they had the asuric bhav, it was practically impossible for them to get delivered. It would be a very rare case of just some special mercy, maybe some Mahapurush like Narada Muni or someone, they have purified some souls like that. That is the mood of these great acharyas, that they purify these fallen souls. But this first time the Lord himself came down in the mood of a devotee, so therefore he wanted to deliver everyone. To the last soul. In fact, it describes that his objective was to see every soul in the universe delivered. at least all of the human beings he wanted to get on this planet. So that's why the Lord Chaitanya is glorified as Namo Mahabhadanaya Krishna Prema Pradayate. That the great, most merciful avatar, Lord has come as his own devotee, giving Krishna Prema Pradayate, giving this Krishna Prema, which even Krishna himself did not give so freely as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That Krishna actually would hide this. He would give it, of course, if you pressed him for it. Just like sometimes chief minister may be having some very special permits and things like that. He doesn't tell anybody about it. He's waiting for some good donation or something like that to the fund. But someone knows that they press him, I want that thing, so then he can get. Like that, Krishna has got some special gifts to give, some special blessings. But he doesn't give that, you see, normally. He gives other things because people don't normally know about that. They ask, give me moksha, I take it. Because after moksha, what is that? You get the liberation, then Krishna has no more obligation. But the explanation is given that like Yudhisthira was praised by Narada that how you are so great, that Krishna for you, he's your father, he's your brother, he's your mother, he's your head of your family, he's your God, he's your everything. Even he became your servant. He became your order carrier. Who can imagine how you can get God himself to come and carry your message like a bearer? This is only possible by bhakti. Therefore you should consider yourself the most fortunate of all people. How is it that Krishna is carrying that shoes of Nanda Maharaj on his head for his father? You see, that is the wonderful quality of the Lord. That's why also the avatar Krishna Balaram has been accepted by great acharyas as the original avatar. Because this avatar contains aspects even Narayana does not contain, since the original must contain all the aspects. Otherwise, how it is original? It is not complete unless it contains everything. The incarnation of Krishna contains aspects which no other avatar contains. Yet there is no avatar that has anything which Krishna himself does not contain. Therefore, they have come to the conclusion that Krishna is the complete form. He is the original form. Om Krishna Voi Sachidananda Guna Krishna Hari Purusha Krishna Purushottamaha. In the Rig Veda it says he's Adi Purusha. In any case, whatever Vishnu Tattva, they're all the same absolute person. But according to different moods and different function, they are manifesting. He's manifesting different aspects of himself. So that form which manifests the maximum is Krishna. And his first prakash is Balaram. So Krishna and Balaram, they also have this, they're the most personal in their dealings. Just acting a simple cowherd boy, cowherd boys. In fact, we find that when Krishna was in Dwaraka, at that time Subal wanted to meet Krishna, and that Krishna was not his queens, and others said, we don't want any of this. They gave some difficulty for Subal to get in, because he was coming as a cowherd boy, just some farmer coming to see Krishna, the Lord of Dwaraka. Who is this farmer coming here? Some cowherder. Then when Krishna heard it was Subal, he said, you have to bring him in. You know, after all, I am also a cowherder. But now, just because of this will of providence, now I have to act as the king here of Dwaraka. But my actual inner mood is I am the cowherd boy. They actually said Krishna, he never leaves from Vrindavan. When Akura was taking Krishna from Vrindavan and he went into the Jamuna, actually that Vrindavan Krishna, he stayed in Vrindavan and he expanded in the Dwaraka Krishna, another Krishna himself, but another expansion of Krishna, left at that point. Krishna himself stayed within that original Vrindavan form of Krishna, who never left Vrindavan, and he was just observing how the devotees were experiencing love for him in his absence. And so they could sometimes feel his presence, but they sometimes couldn't see him, and so on. So these things are possible for devotees to understand. But before we can get to that understanding, we should know what is the power of Krishna, what is his potency. Therefore, here in the second canto, it describes about Purushukta. It describes about universal form, about this unlimited potency, because otherwise we'll get some who are just saying, oh, Krishna and Balaram, who are they? We won't understand. So first we have to know who is Vishnu, how Vishnu is expanding. Then we come to understand that who is the original form of Vishnu, that same Krishna is Vishnu. That Vishnu is unlimited, that he is the original person, that he is beyond death, he is immortal, he is beyond karma. Being beyond karma, this is so important. Everything we do has a karma. How to get rid of the karmas? Even you do pap or you do punya, that doesn't counteract each other. But when you serve the Lord, because he's beyond the karmas, that means the karmas go to him. So he absorbs those karmas and one is then free. So one has to know the science of action. That if I, and this is explained in Gita, one should know what is karma, what is vikarma, what is akarma. When you're serving the Lord in bhakti, it's akarma. There's no reaction for that. Devotee is serving the Lord, then he is filling the shelter, then he also becomes fearless. Bajahure manna srinanda nandana abhoya charanaravindare. This abhoya charanaravinda, one who gets fearlessness by taking shelter at the lotus feet of Sri Nanda Nandana Krishna. This name is also the name of Bhaktivedanta Swami. AC means abhoya charanaravinda. It was his name given at birth. The Guru kept the name because it said it's a very good name. Sometimes the name is good, so it's kept. Generally it's changed. Some slight change was given from Abhoycharana to Abhoycharana Ravinda. It's very long, such that, so that pure devotee is fearless. Otherwise how Prabhupada at the age of 70 can go alone by ship to America to spread this message of Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Sanatan Dharma. Unless you have complete faith in Krishna, complete shelter of Krishna, it's not possible to have that level of fearlessness. But the devotee, they have this fearlessness as they advance. But that is also a quality. The quality of animal life means always fearful. People think that animals are happy. In France, they ask the people, what do you like to be in your next life? The men said, I'd like to be a dog. And the women said, I'd like to be a cat. This was the number one choice. Second choice of men was horse, second choice of women was snake. They don't know. They think that animals are free, animals are free. What freedom they have? You look at a bird. It's always looking every moment. They're moving their head constantly because they're always afraid. Animal, the nature of animal life is fear. Every animal is afraid. Cat is thinking when the dog will catch me. Dog is thinking when that guy will kick me. They're always afraid. And so in human life, what's happening now in the modern world, we're having big Boeing jets. We're having nice cities. But what is happening? We're all afraid. Why? Because of lack of spiritual development, increase of animalistic tendency. In spite of so much technology, everyone is afraid. Afraid of terrorists, afraid of crashes, afraid of so many things. And they're rightfully so. That these are all real dangers. But so long we think we're the body and we know the body can be destroyed any moment, we should be afraid. That is the nature of animal life. You know you're the body, and you know the body can be killed any moment. So any intelligent animal is afraid. Because the fear is a justified fear for an animal. Because the body will be destroyed sooner or later. And preservation means how to make it later. You can never make it never. Then why a person becomes fearless when they are a devotee or when they get spiritual knowledge? Because they know they're not the body. So that type of fear, of course care is there, precaution may be there, but that fearlessness, meaning that freedom from that desperation or from the that type of ignorant type of fear, where one is feeling hopelessness and so on, that is not there. A group of psychologists did a study in Los Angeles of the devotees, and they said that because there was so much complaint saying they are brainwashed, zombies or something like that. People get this idea in the West because we chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. They think this makes you into a mindless idiot because you're repeating this mantra. You can listen to this rock and roll all day, that doesn't make you a mindless idiot. But if you chant the name of God, that makes you mindless. This is their presumption. They're hearing at full blast, they're hearing, I can't get no satisfaction, all these things. That doesn't make you a mindless idiot. But if you chant the names of God, that makes you mindless. This is their idea. This makes you brainwashed. Prabhupada, he retorted that they have no brain to wash. He came to give them brain. He came from India to give them intelligence. They have no spiritual intelligence. So, these psychologists, so they were neutral people. They did a study of the devotees, and they found that the devotees were not brainless idiots. That on average, they are more intelligent than the normal people, and they are more, psychologically, they are more self-sufficient. They found that more people in society, they're more afraid of what people, other people are thinking, therefore they conform themselves, and they're actually more of a type of, kind of crippled personality. But that they found that the devotees were each one not so concerned about what others were thinking on that level, that therefore they were more self-sufficient, more independent thinking, more, of course, voluntarily they had dedicated themselves to a particular path, but that was something voluntary, that was something that was conscious, that was an intelligent decision. So as a result, their entire personality they found to be somewhat more developed. He said that, but this is all a natural thing, nothing very abnormal, these individuals like that in the material world also. But they said one thing was very abnormal with the devotees. They said they didn't found any case of anyone who had been in the movement over a period of 2 years who had suffered depression. They said in the material world, especially in America, that one of the biggest problems is depression. That everyone suffers depression at some case or another, by death of relative or by business failure or by frustration of this kind, or that they all suffer depression. And during the time of depression, that the danger of suicide, danger of violent acts, danger of drug addiction, danger of business further collapse, so many things are very great. They couldn't find any devotee who suffered any symptom of depression. This is the actual thing, because what Abhaya Charanaravindare, this fearlessness, when you develop in your relationship with Krishna, you know that he is reciprocating. One devotee can feel that in many ways. Ways that some person may say a superstition, or someone else may say it's imagination. But whatever, over a period of time, the devotee feels not only personal satisfaction, not only feels a personal peace of mind, which is real, but they also feel that Krishna is personally reciprocating in various ways. And they become fearless. Their faith is reinforced by different things that happen. So in this way, they don't have depression. For whatever reason you can say, they don't have depression. So that is actually just another evidence of everything that here we are reading today. That the Lord gives fearlessness. So somebody wants to end depression, wants to end mental disease, wants to end frustration, even all these material common problems, they become a devotee of Krishna, chant Hare Krishna, be happy. And if you want to achieve liberation, alright, same thing. You want to achieve spiritual full knowledge, what is the absolute truth, where have I come from, what is the goal of life? The only way you can achieve that is through Krishna consciousness. Nature of the spirit is to be happy. We want the happiness. We have to bring our spirit, bring the self, bring ourselves into the spiritual environment. So that's easily created by this process of chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna,
Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Hare Hare.
And the devotees, they become independent of the cigarette smoking, of intoxication, of other type of illicit activities which take a person and control their life and then ruin their life. Hare Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
Any questions? Yes.
When we preach, then materialism, I say, I'm fearless of death, and I'm fearless.
You just pull out a pistol with a blank here and shoot him. See what happens. It goes off. See what happens. They take you to court and sue you for scaring the hell out of them. Just like that Uttam Kumar. I was telling in Madras the story, this famous movie star. He was like in North India, he was like in the eastern part, he was like Amit Bachchan, did all these stunts and superhero type. But he got some disease and he was dying, and so he grabbed his doctor's hand and he was just saying, even the reporters are there saying, Bachao, Bachao, save me, save me. So then he died, holding the doctor's hand. So people were startled. The big hero was crying, save me, he died, like that, in complete fear. But then they asked the doctor that, didn't you feel ashamed that you couldn't save your patient when he was dying like that? Crying, save me, he said, listen, many times he cried like that, many times I saved him, there's only one time I failed. Someone may be fearless. There's two key reasons to be fearless. One is through knowledge, and the other is through ignorance. You see, if someone is very ignorant, they can also be fearless. Just like some people are insane, they walk off the roof, they're fearless. Does that mean? Then they fall five stories and die. Fear is the natural instinct. We should, we'll fear. It's an instinct. It's like something is that's within our hormones. It's within our body. Say that there's some danger there, that physical response will be there. But this fearlessness means it's another higher level. If you don't know what the future holds and you're not afraid, what is that? What is the value of your fearlessness? If somebody by taking drugs, he's not afraid. What is the value of that? But if you know what the future holds, therefore you're not, because you have knowledge, that is real fearlessness. Someone is ignorant, he doesn't know what he's been able to just keep his brain stunned. But no, I have no fear. It's like someone saying, don't go ahead because there's a riot ahead. It's no, I have no fear. You go and then he gets his car stolen. That type of fearlessness has no value. We're talking about fearlessness due to having real knowledge and real confidence in what's happening. Not fearlessness due just that, all right. That way some people think, there's no death, there's no life after death, therefore I'm fearless, let me die. Nothing is there. Someone may be fearless like that also. But in actual practicality, it's very hard to sustain that. But say even if someone has that, what have they gained? If they say there's nothing after death, so their fearlessness is because they say there's nothing. So whether I live or die, it doesn't make any difference. I don't exist. Like Zen Buddhists. There's nothing. Everything is void. Whether I exist or don't, so then why worry about it? But say that they have some speculation like that. So then when you die, then it's finished. Nothing to worry about. What this type of philosophy is promoting terrorism. They think that the value of life is no value. Whether you kill a man or you just throw a 200-pound bag of cement into the river, what's the difference? Since life is nothing, so killing is nothing, everything is nothing, nothing is nothing, all is nothing, from nothing to nothing. You see, so this is all promoting terrorism in the world. This impersonal, you find the impersonal religious so-called followers of religions which are promoting more impersonal idea tend to be more violent as a nature, as a natural thing, than those who believe in a personal. Although everybody is more or less violent in this day and age due to the Kali Yuga and due to the meat eating and so on. But that kind of values about doing some horrible act of violence in an impersonal idea is more. Because for them, personality doesn't have any real value. That is historically, one can see, read the newspapers. Who does the most horrible things? Those who don't believe in God, who don't believe or believe that God is there but He's impersonal. They can do anything. That type of fearlessness that I don't care what happens, I'll do anything. That's not a productive fearlessness. You're talking about having fearlessness due to knowledge. Fearlessness due to a higher spiritual realization. Someone says, I am fearless, and oh, you must be a devotee. When he has fearlessness, that also, he said, yes, that's been given to you by Krishna, because it says here in the verse that Krishna is the giver of fearlessness. He is the controller. So if somebody has any fearlessness, he's blessed by Krishna. I had a girl tell me that. I was in San Francisco. And the girl said, I don't believe in God. I don't believe in any of these things. I don't need these things. I'm self-sufficient. So and so. She's claiming she had a small child. All of a sudden there was an earthquake. Sometime in San Francisco there were earthquakes. And the hall started shaking and the things moving. And suddenly she started screaming out, I don't want to die! God save me! God save me! Within 10 minutes, I was astonished. She's running out of the house saying, God save me. The minute before, she said, I don't believe in God, I don't care for all this, you know. Then all of a sudden, the house started shaking. Then suddenly, she got totally afraid. God save me, God save me, running out of the house. Because people think God is an interruption in their enjoyment. So they say, I don't know God. But then when the fear comes, when that fear of death is there, then they think this is a greater problem. Then who is going to save them? Then they say God. Yes?
How do you account for the present development in the civilization, science, technology? Who is the cause behind it?
Who is the cause?
Yes.
Will of Providence. These things are all predicted. Krishna told Mayasura that don't give all this yantra vaigyan in the Kali Yuga, don't give it now because it disturbs them. Yantra Vaigyan is always there, it's mentioned in the Vedas. Airplanes and so many things were there, but if you have the higher psychic power, why use the machine? You have a new Maruti car? If you don't have one, you ask those who have. And you keep a track. Is that car immortal? How much energy? Any new thing you get is very nice, but after a while, the tires wear out, you change the tire, fill the air, put the fluid in the brakes, put the oil in the brake, then the spark plug wear out, then check up, then tuning, and this, and it goes on. You have a machine, means what? You have to serve that machine. Because nature and material world is always breaking down. So you want to keep something in tip-top condition, you have to put so much energy into it. So Ramchandra, if he wanted, he couldn't have Boeing Biman. But Pushpa Biman is much better. You don't have it. It's running by spiritual potencies. The Devatas, they don't mess around there. But the Asuras, they use these Jantras. Asuras always had Jantra Boygyan. But they have to work like anything to maintain it. They have higher level Jantra Boygyan also that requires less maintenance than what we are doing now. What we are doing is the lowest level.
So in a sense, there is a divine mind behind this creation.
Behind the creation, divine mind is there. I don't know how it fits into this context of your question.
So when you look at it, can't you see Krishna in it?
Of course. Anything that's wonderful in the world, you can see the reflection of Krishna in it. We're not against technology. It's not technology that's bad, it's how they use it. Right? What's wrong with light, electricity? Nothing's wrong with it. It's a neutral thing. Technology, if you take an airplane and you fly devotees to go somewhere and do some preaching, what is the problem? Or, you see, everything is sattvic, rajas, and tamas. If you use something to destroy others, it's tamas. If you use it just for maintaining your material, or increasing your material situation for your sense gratification, that's rajas. And if you use it for helping others and for bringing people to a higher awareness, that's sattvic. So if things are used for a sattvic purpose, it's very beneficial. If it's rajasic, it's neutral. It's neither beneficial, neither it's very harmful. If you use something for tamasic, then it's harmful. So the problem is that many of the, for the purpose of rajas, people are doing tamas. Just like medicine may be good, but then some people are giving spurious medicine to make more profit. So for a Raja's purpose, they're doing some tamasic thing, and that's creating problems. So the thing itself is not, it's material nature is neither good nor bad. It's simply an energy of God. If you use it in God's service, if you use it in Krishna's service, it's good, it's pure, it's uplifting, it's wonderful. If you use it for destruction and for, then it's a material, if you use it for some material purpose, then it has some temporary effect. The temporary effect may be good or may be bad according to the particular mode it's under. Everything has the sanction of Krishna. How the intelligent person is desiring to do something, he wants to, they're researching for long hours. Krishna gives them the intelligence, how they can do that. If they want to build a bomb, he also gives them intelligence. If they want to build a medicine, they make a medicine, he gives them intelligence. How they use it, that's up to them, and then they have to take the karmas for that. Krishna is a super soul, antarjami. A person is wanting to do something bad enough, they're trying for it hard enough, and if they have the necessary punya, that they can get what they want. Punya means what? That's your bank balance, you can get what you want. If you have good punya and you want to do a bad thing, you can get the power from God to do it. But then you use up your punya. Then after that, when it's used up, you fall down. So previously in the world, people were doing more and more. They were doing many pious activities. All the forefathers, other, they were doing. So some punya is there, so they're able to do some things. But now they're doing so many sinful activities. Gradually the punya is going down and the pap is increasing. So this whole civilization can crumble. It can destroy itself. With the same jets that are flying us from here to there, they can also fly the nuclear bombs and drop those bombs. They've already calculated there's enough nuclear warheads to destroy the civilization about 100 and so or more times over. 100 or 1,000 times, I forget this, it's like incredible. They have so much nuclear warheads that it's overkill. So this does that mean we're not against technology, we're against, because unless there's spiritual training side by side, then these whole things will be misused. Simply going on increasing new, just like they created, that they have now, you can buy electric toothbrush. So they don't have to just go through that stress and strain of moving your wrist. You just said, it just moves. Right? And then everything is so automatic, you don't have to get up to turn your TV, they don't have no cordless. And they want this, and so what now in America they have also, you have to spend $1,000 and join a health spa. Because you don't get any exercise, you have to spend $1,000 and go, and then they have machines so you can run and do rowing and do all exercise in air conditioning. So that this is all artificial insanity. We create a society which to make more and more comfort. Then we have so bad health because we don't move. We have to then spend money in more machines to do exercising. So the point is that the problem is, what is the need of all this artificial lifestyle? Why not just bring things back to a more natural way of life? Because what's doing is we're wasting valuable human energy. All these things, all these machines mean waste of energy. I found in the village, when I'm traveling around India, I found one lady was making in the morning, she's taking her rice paddy, soaking it in water overnight. She cooked it in the sand and put it on, put it in a small, she had a hollowed out log, wooden log with a steel top in the bottom. The daughter was putting in this hot, cooked in the sand, rice into that steel cup. And the lady was taking, she was about 65 years old. She's taking a stick and she was hitting the rice and flattening it and making her morning cereal. The daughter was taking out the rice and just, cleaning it off. And that was the cereal for the family in the morning. So everyone was in tip-top shape. So now we buy the cornflakes, this, that, different thing you're buying now from a package, and you have to pay 50 times the cost than what the actual grain costs. And this is considered advancement of civilization. But those people, they had to go through the effort. You say, well, we don't have the time now, we have to fast life. Our fast life, we have to work so hard so we can maintain this artificial way of life. So that's what we're against, is that why unnecessarily complicate life? You may need defense, you may need, for certain things you may need, essential commodities you may need, agriculture or for medicine, or certain things you may want to have high tech. Otherwise we're just doing high tech for this, this is like a mad rush. Where it's ending, nobody knows. Nobody can see where the end of this civilization is, but many people think it's probably ending up in nuclear war. So unless people have more of a spiritual outlook, then they're going to use all these material act things simply for destruction. And if they have a spiritual outlook, then naturally they're going to use these material things for beneficial. So we're simply saying whatever material things are there, side by side, there should be a promotion of spiritual values, spiritual education, and let people be able to be happy living a more natural way of life. Then that way, unnecessarily, we won't have to have unnecessary technology. Whatever technology is necessary, that will never always be there. You cannot turn back the clocks. We're in this yuga and we're here to stay. Until they blow everything up and then all these machines are useless, then we have to adapt. It'll be easier to adapt in India than in the West. But wherever you are, the real governor which can stop this rampant proliferation of materialistic violence and degradation, to counteract that you need spiritual values. And the simple method, the capsule method, if you're going to do everything modern way, then also do religion in a capsule way. Whole religion, the Vedas say, all the Vedas, all the Tantras, all the Agamanas, all sacrifice, everything has been combined into 8 syllables. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. So that's you just chant this Hare Krishna Maha Mantra and everything is there combined within there. So this is especially suited for the modern world. You want everything quick, fast? All right, you take it. This is the capsule form. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Hare, Hare Hare. You see how fast it works.
So, you see,
no comment. That you judge.
If you look closely into our mind always tends towards some absolute.
whether in spiritual or in the material nature. So we can we justify this tending towards the absolute, both in the material as well as in the spiritual? And this is only a phase in the development. That this material development is only a phase. And that there is always a divine mind balancing the whole movement. Probably at a later stage, they will come back to reconcile the opposing forces.
Who's they?
Probably God will manifest it in that way.
You see, we can go on in this way, interpolating and imagining and speculating.
No, we are not imagining. As we see it in reality, that there is tending towards an absolute in everything, whether in destruction or whether in now.
Right, but the analysis of that will be not only aided, but it will actually be properly understood if you take advantage of the words that God has given us, of the words that Krishna has given in the Bhagavad Gita, in the Srimad Bhagavatam. You may see that there's a tendency to an absolute, so then you want to know why is that. Then you start to make different assumptions. This is why, that is why. The thing is that if you go to the Vedas, it says yes, because there is an absolute. Naturally there's a tendency for an absolute. Because absolute truth is there, so naturally there is a tendency to go looking for the absolute. Because we are eternal, even if you try to just kill a small bug, the bug runs away. Because the nature of is to live, not to die. Death is unnatural. Therefore nobody wants to die. Because by nature the Atma is eternal. So this a change of body is an unnatural thing. But we have to go through it because we're in material conditional life. So we want to understand why these tendencies are there, why a person wants to live, why they go for the absolute. Because they want to live because we are eternal by nature. They go for the absolute because everything is coming from the absolute truth. So to understand these things, your ideas are all right, but then if you want to really see whether they are valid or not. Otherwise, if it's just opinion, you have one opinion, another person says, well, I have another opinion. This way, over the cups of coffee, people can sit and give their opinions. But there will be no conclusion. So that's why, according to the Vedic tradition, we try to go to and analyze from the Vedic viewpoint, because here we're getting information what is existing beyond our perception. Something which is beyond our ability to perceive, what is the use of discussing it? How can you, what is the value of trying to, by simply speculating, to try to understand what it is? Something which is beyond, what is beyond this universe? Even what is within this universe, they can't figure out. But there's at least some idea. They can study the vibrations, the type of light coming, and through various means they can try to assume what is the components of that light, whether it's containing elements they know. That's somewhat, at least there's some hint that they can get some idea from some perception. But if you say what is beyond this universe, beyond the perception, what is the value of discussing that? So to discuss that or understand that which is beyond our perception, beyond our comprehension, therefore the Vedas have been given. But to bring us into focus, they also explain what is within our perception. That within the body there's a self, and the self is situated in the heart, and the consciousness is spread from the self throughout the entire body, through the bloodstream. And therefore the chitta's consciousness can be perceived. And the consciousness is a symptom of the self. So if we cut off the circulation of our hand for a period of time, cut off the blood, then we know the hand loses its feeling. If we sit in a particular way where the blood doesn't get to the feet, then our feet fall asleep, we call it. We can't feel anything, then they're numb. That means the body by nature is numb. It's not conscious. But because the soul is in the heart and the consciousness is spread through the bloodstream, therefore the body appears to be conscious. It is able to perceive, and the senses are activated by the presence of consciousness. When the soul leaves the body itself has no more consciousness. It is a dull, dead piece of flesh and bone. It has no value whatsoever. Except maybe you can sell it as for organs or something, but as far as spare parts or anything. But as far as a valuable thing, its value is gone. So we think that the value is the body, the real value is the soul. The real value is the spirit soul, and that is what we are trying to explain to people. You want to know what is the spirit soul? That you cannot know it simply by this type of analysis. You have to ultimately come to the Vedas, because the Vedas are the authorized scientific books on the science of the self, science of what is beyond our perception. So if you want to know why is it that things are happening, or how is it that God is working, why don't you hear from Him Himself? He has spoken Bhagavad Gita. He has explained, na karmyate, I'm not karma lipyate, I'm not engaged or bound by karmas. Just today we're hearing from Narada Muni. It said He is the controller of immortality and fearlessness. He is transcendental to death and fruitive actions. He's above fruitive activity. That means that what's going on in the material world, He's above it. If He wants to interfere, He can. He has that ability, but He doesn't normally get involved except when He wants to. You see, not that everything that goes on is personally done by Him or motor. He gives His sanction. He lets it, like, let it be. You want to do this horrible thing? All right, do it. And then He adjusts in such a way that the people who deserve that karma, they get the result. Just like somebody wants to hijack a plane, they're dead set on it, so then He just organizes it through His different agents, that all the people on that plane are people who deserve to get hijacked.
The Vedas say that there are four yugas. That's Satya Yuga, Vapara Yuga, and isn't it a cycle? And it's all pre-planned.
Yes.
So it's a divine play.
Cycles are pre-planned.
I mean, the Kali Yuga and all these, and such things are going to happen. Such developments are going to take place. I think the Vedas are said about that.
It's not that Krishna is desiring that you do that. He knows this is what's going to happen. He knows the nature of it, just like a father knows the nature of his children. When he sees a child is growing up and having bad friends, and he knows that if my child doesn't get out of this association, he's going to get drunk, he's going to have a drug problem, he's going to get diseases or have some social mark on him. But does that mean that the father desires it? That the father is instigating it? Because he can see in the future that this is what's going to happen. Krishna is not instigating that you all become bad. Because this is Kali Yuga. Otherwise, why is coming down as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? Why he came as Krishna? Why he came down as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? And he explained to the people, you follow the Vedas. This is a disease of this age. I'm telling you this because it's a disease. Why the government tells you now it's malaria epidemic, you use mosquito net, you take quinine pill, you do this. Why? Because it's quite a malaria epidemic may be there. They were telling the people so they all go out and get malaria. Shastra is not saying this Kali Yuga, so the people then they should be more enthusiastic for engaging in sinful activity. This Shastra is telling this is a critical period. This is a time when it's very easy to be contaminated. You have to take precaution. That's why it's the government is the God is the government. He's telling the people, this is Kali Yuga. This is the nature. Then he says, what is the cure? Harinama, Harinama, Harinamaiva Kevalam, Kalova Nasteva 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 Gatiranyata. Then in this age of Kali, you chant the name of God, chant the name of God, chant the name of God. There's no other way, no other way, no other way to be purified in this age of Kali. He gives a medicine for this disease. He has His own divine play in the spiritual world. There you can say it's all His play. There He's enjoying with His cowherd friends and cowherd girlfriends and with His mother and fathers and His all devotees. That's His play. That He personally is involved in. And with this material world, He's aloof. It's not that Krishna is forcing people to be blinded by bad doctors, or that Krishna is forcing people that they should do all these horrible things. That is due to their own spiritual bankruptcy and to their own material karmas that these things are happening. Krishna is saying, you don't do these things. Why in the Vedas it says you don't do violence, ahimsa, paro dharma, different maxims are given, different injunctions are given. Government says you don't do this, you don't drive on the wrong side of the road, you don't drink and drive, you know, if someone does it, does that mean government is promoting it? How can you say that? Government is saying, don't do those things. You're doing it anyway. Krishna is saying, you do this, it's a pop, I'm going to punish you. They do it anyway. Then they have the audacity to say that Krishna is responsible. That he's doing it in his leela, his play. This is totally offensive and ridiculous. And people should be ashamed of it. They're the number one atheists in this world that say that God is the one who's causing our suffering. You cause your own suffering due to your sinful activity. And if you want to stop suffering, then stop promoting this bogus idea and surrender to God and follow His law. That is Dharma. So-called sophisticated, educated, mental speculators are ruining India and ruining the world. Hare Krishna. Do not mind. I hate to see the world being destroyed by this type of mental speculation, and I'm sorry to see you.
I do not believe in God. I'm fully surrendered to Krishna. I just wanted to get your views on this. Why the outside world is believing? I think you have misunderstood me, and I'm really sorry if I've asked that question to you. I'm fully surrendered to Krishna, and you can ask the devotee. I'm really sorry that you have to shout at me like this.
I'm not shouting at you, I'm shouting at the philosophy.
I wanted to get a view. Why the outside world is what's going on in the outside world? Should we not have an understanding? Why the people are... So that I can go...
If it's not your philosophy, then you're so much more the better. And because I don't want it to be your philosophy, because I care for you, because I care for this world, therefore I'm saying it in an impassioned way.
Shilacharya Bhakti!
So you take it more seriously. Because this type of philosophy, people take it very lightly. They have their Gita Gyani Yagyas and this Yagya and that Yagya. They sit around and they mental speculate. And then you have big planning commission. And all these ideas are promoted.
And if I did not believe in God, I would not be here. You can ask the devotees. I come here regularly, every Sunday.
People may believe in God. But then they say God is formless. So what is that belief? That it's like this, we have to refine our belief in God. I don't say that you don't believe in God. But then if you believe in God, then you should know how to refine your, how to improve and how to expand on that belief of God so that it becomes complete and it becomes totally satisfying to you.
I'm not going to propound this philosophy. I just wanted your views. That is all. I'm sorry anyway.
No, don't be sorry. It's all right. Please don't mind that I didn't. I'm just saying in that sense that these views they're actually, if you see the effect on society, you read it, the view that maybe you're saying it is a devil's advocate. So then, if you take the devil's advocate, then don't take it personally, right? In a devil advocate, if I'm saying a view that I heard in a bazaar, and if I get the answer to that, I shouldn't take it personally because it's not my view. So if it's not your view, then don't take it personally. If the shoe fits, wear it. So if it doesn't fit you, then don't take it personally. But because you're hammering on the same viewpoint, so then, all right, so you want to bring it up, then we'll discuss it in full force. What is the real value? Let people see. Every day we're reading Indian Express, you read in the Hindu, you read in all the newspapers, all these India Today, all these so-called sophisticated journalists, they're all writing this type of views. And you will see, what is the result? What are the youth of India? They're becoming drug addicts in the universities following America. Why? Because of these type of views. I don't say they're your views, but you're bringing them up. So if you bring them up, then to a certain point, naturally we start to feel it. Look at how the great heritage of India, where people could become spiritually conscious, they could know what is the purpose of life. They should be rather leading the entire world. Instead, what are they doing? They're becoming totally destroyed by all these type of ideas. So I don't say that your idea. I'm very pleased to see that you don't have these ideas. But therefore, still, the fact remains that these ideas, which are actually leading people very subtly away, they don't come out and say, I don't believe in God. Better, they came out and say, I don't believe in God. They say, no, I believe in God, but He's the one that's doing all these things. And what does it say? There's a verse. I'm not responsible for my sins. He's doing everything. It's His play. I believe in God. What is that? If I say, my father, I believe in my father, but my father is forcing me to do prostitution, black market, everything. That means your father should be put in jail. That's what the court will say. So when we say that God, I believe in God, but He's the one responsible, it's His leela, it's His kela, He's doing everything. He's predicted, He's showing, this is how the material world degenerates. He's the one who finally comes and kills everyone off and reestablishes Satya Yuga. Then it gradually again and again degenerates. Because the nature of the material world is to constantly degenerate and degenerate and degenerate until finally he becomes so intolerable in the end of Kali Yuga that himself becomes dull and just clears off the whole show and reestablishes Satya Yuga. That means his standard is Satya Yuga. But due to the passing of time, it starts to go down. What is the advantage of Kali Yuga? The advantage is because it's so horrible, it's so materialistic, it's so rotten to try to do anything punya, anything you want to do, material, good, religious work, it's practically doomed to various obstacles. Therefore, at this time, it's a very good time to go into complete vairagya, to go into complete kind of simply hopelessness as far as material future is concerned, because there's no future in the material world. You can see it. It's in a Satya Yuga, you don't feel that way. It's very peaceful, nice, everyone's friendly, there's all religious thing going on. So people, they're not so oppressed. In this age, as you can see, there's so much difficulty that it's a good impetus to simply fix your mind in God and go back to the spiritual world. That's why it describes in the Bhagavatam that especially the good quality of this age, it's kalo dosha nidhi rajan. It's got so many defects, hasti yaka mahanguna, but it's got one good quality. Kirtanat eva krishnasya. What is that? Kirtan, you chant the name of Krishna. That is the good quality. Why? Mukta sangha. You get liberation from the material world, param bhajet, and you go back to the spiritual world. You achieve the supreme. That this is the advantage of Kali Yuga, that in this age, you get easier to achieve a liberation. You can achieve it in 60 years, in 100 years. In Satya Yuga, you have to meditate for tens of thousands of years. Treta Yuga, you have to do huge sacrifices. So in this age, it's one side, alright, Krishna, he balances things out. Material people have made a mess of it, so alright, so he's giving a facility. Alright, this is what happens. If I leave the show in your hands, you ruin the whole thing and you make a mess of it. And when it gets too bad, I'm going to come in and straighten everything out. But in the meantime, I'm letting you have your play. I'm letting you have, this is our playground. We're the one who makes a mess of this world. We're the one who desire these things. The politicians, the leaders, the individuals, they're the one who want to have the chicken in every pot. They're the one who want to have illicit sex. They're the one. Krishna never promoted the free love. He said you'd be married. If you're not married and have religious sex life, you're doing sin. So when we put the blame, he's not desiring that people should do all the things they're doing in the world today. He's telling the opposite, but we don't follow his laws. Therefore, things go degraded. So what is, those who do follow, in spite of all the hellish situation, those who try to follow his law, who chant his name, what happens? They go easily back to Godhead. Just like if you have so many sons are bad, and one son, he tries to follow, the father says, give him the whole inheritance. It's like that. Right now, everyone is disobeying. Anyone who obeys at this time, they get a special benefit. They get special bonus. So that's why we're trying to promote. And also, in spite of that, the whole situation, Kali Yuga, if we are able to spread this vibration of Krishna's name far enough, it counteracts the effect of the Kali Yuga. Therefore, we're trying to spread this chanting of Hare Krishna far and wide so that this effect of Kali Yuga can be pushed back. Then you can see an actual peaceful world to live in. Hare Krishna.